night here at the Golden One Center, and it is game night here on this game night. Draft guys getting ready for the Kings and the Thunder.
Yay!
We've got Kyle Draper back with us today, and they are celebrating tonight between quarters and during timeouts. Looks like TV game shows, and right now we're just seeing a demonstration of, Kyle, I think that was live with real people, hungry, hungry hippos that they were just playing at. Yeah, so
yeah, that was a great board game back in the day. Did you play that, right?
Or I don't know if I know what it is, but I don't know if I ever actually
played it. Dude, that
was
my game back.
Really?
Yes, I used to love some hungry, hungry. I was actually I love board games in general.
Uh-huh.
You know, you talk to my mom to this day, like, yeah, Kyle, you always want a game night at the house. I love board games.
Yeah.
Kids love them too now.
Yeah. So you got the tradition in the Draper household even now with the kids?
Nah, no tradition. You know, but we'll break out the board game, you know. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, you play games on your phone.
Right.
So, like, we'll play Life or Monopoly on our phones now.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Not the same. You know, it's not the same. But, we do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an old man complaint. You ever play Yahtzee?
Yes.
Yeah. If you play it now with some younger people, you know, and you get to the end and you're adding up the scores,
yes,
and they need their phone. They can't add up the scores.
Get out of here. They can't carry the one and
no,
all that.
No, hold on.
Hold on.
Do you have a calculator? Oh, there's one on my phone. Add up the score. I can't do it. I need
that. Is get off my lawn. Because it's
but
quicker,
it's true.
And easier.
Yeah.
It's true, but on the phone, you can boop, 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 boop. It's nice and quick and easy, right?
I guess. I just think it should be something where you're like, oh, what do I do? Where's my phone? You're probably right.
The worst is when I have to help my daughter for her with her math homework, and it'll be like a fraction or something. And instead of, like, going through it, I'll actually just punch it in on my phone just to get the correct answer.
But then
and
you
then
play
go
it off
through
like, well, let me
no,
tell you what.
No, we work through it. But just to make sure I did everything right and everything, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's technology.
I gotcha.
You still reach for the encyclopedia when you want to look up something?
Oh, yeah, no. It's not there. Right. I reach for it like, what happened to my encyclopedia? It's not there.
I miss the encyclopedias. Those were great.
Here are some strange numbers for you. I don't pretend to know what these mean, but they're a little alarming. As we get ready for the Kings homestand, and one of the things we've been talking about today is the fact that, yeah, the Kings, 13-9, hey, we'll take that. But it seems like they've been a little inconsistent. So what's keeping them from winning more games here? The Kings have a positive net rating in every single quarter,
yep,
except the second quarter. And as Kings Herald points out, I think Akis wrote this, and he gets some of these numbers from John Schumann. The Kings have a minus 15.5 net rating in the second quarter. And the only team performing worse is Memphis. Second quarter, minus 15.5. In the 13 games the Kings have won, they've managed to have a positive net rating in the second quarter. The net rating in their nine losses, in the second quarter of the nine losses, the Kings are minus 38.8.
Wow.
So they are getting, when they're playing badly, it all seems to come apart in the second quarter. Yeah.
And we've seen that, right?
We
saw it against the Pelicans, that Pelicans game. Remember, in the first quarter, they came out hitting on all cylinders. Everything was good. And then it fell apart, you know? And so, why do you think that is?
My first thought was, well, you know why? Because the bench hasn't been as consistent as the Kings thought. But if you look at the numbers, the starters still tend to play the most minutes in the second quarter. And for some reason, in the second quarter, the starters are terrible in some of these losses.
Right.
And they played well in the first quarter, the starters have. So, I don't know. It's one of those things that makes you go, I'm not sure what it means. But it's so dramatic that there's something going on there in the second quarter for the Kings.
Yeah, it's how many games have we seen Sacramento come out fired up, hitting threes, looking good, and then it falls apart? I keep going back to that Pelicans game because that one was so glaring because you felt good, you're feeling good, and then all of a sudden it turned on a dime. And a lot of times it's not like, you know, it's over time. It's not like a team – you know, gets mm-hmm. back into it over, you know, like it's night and day. Like,
yeah.
And we saw that, you know, against the Clippers the other day, they got outscored 38-24. I think it was in that second quarter against the Clippers. And
would you say Domas is having another good year? I would.
He's having an okay year. His last few games have been kind of subpar, to be honest with you.
His net rating is positive in every other quarter, but in the second quarter, it's minus 26.8.
Wow.
Harrison Barnes, second quarter, minus 18.6. Herter, minus 17.3. Keegan, minus 14.2. So it's not like one guy's playing badly. Just for whatever reason, the Kings, when they get boat raced, they're getting boat raced, especially in the second quarter.
I don't know what you can point it to. You could say the bench, but a lot of times that's Malik Monk, JaVale McGee comes out. I don't know, because ultimately, like you said, the starters are playing probably 8 minutes in that quarter, in the second quarter. And so I have no idea what it is. You brought up Domantas Sabonis. Over his last eight games, he's averaging just 15.4 points, shooting 44% from the field.
And so I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so his numbers have taken a dip as well. And I don't know, man. What we're seeing is this team is consistently inconsistent. And will the real Sacramento Kings please stand up, to quote the great Marshall Mathers? Because I don't know who they are right now. Are they a top four or five team? They could be. Are they a play-in team? At times, they look like it.
Right now, they look more like a play-in team.
Right,
they certainly could be more than that, but right now, that's what they look like.
You know, and when I look at their schedule, though, they do have some quality wins. Let's not, you know, act like they don't have quality wins, Whitey. You beat Denver. You beat OKC. You beat
Minnesota in Minnesota.
You beat Minnesota. You beat the Lakers. And so you've beaten those teams ahead of you in the standings. It's the teams behind you. The Clippers, the Warriors, the Rockets, the Pelicans that you're having problems with. That's what's so concerning to me. It's like the teams ahead of you, you fared well against. The teams you're supposed to beat, those are the ones you're losing to. That's concerning.
Doesn't it seem sometimes like there's a guy missing? There's one more piece that's missing. I'm not sure what it is. We're trying to figure out what that could be. Do you think is this a possible option? I think we've talked about this, and I think you will not agree with this. Is it possible you brought in a five where you could slide Sabonis back to the four? Could that be one of the big answers or pieces to your puzzle when you're looking at bringing somebody in?
I'm all about give me a name. Tell me who. And then we can have that conversation. You know, first thought is, nope, it's not going to happen.
Now, I think I agree with you.
Now, if you're bringing in a Brooke Lopez or something, okay, I can see that. If you're going out and getting Kristaps Porzingis, okay, I can see that. You know, but outside of that, who's out there that you can pair along Sabonis?
I don't have an answer for you.
Oh, my God, this is so frustrating, Whitey. Not that you don't have an answer, but I wish there was a quick fix where we could say, yep, that dude right there, he's going to make this team into a championship contender. He's going to make this team into a team that can go deep in April and May. And I don't think it's there. I don't think there's any easy answer for this Kings team right now.
Well, something to keep an eye on. The Kings, when they struggle in the second quarter, that's often a really bad sign. Hopefully we won't see any of that on this homestand. Speaking of players who can play center, we haven't gotten your thoughts yet, Drapes, on what you thought of Draymond Green's actions against the Suns, the league's reaction. We were on yesterday with Emil when the news of the indefinite suspension broke. Jay and I, we all shared a lot of opinions on what this means for Draymond. Does seem interesting, the league now, rather than, hey, that's it, we're coming down, we're cracking down on Draymond. Now it's like, oh, we're going to try to help him. What do you make of the whole mess? And do you think it's possible, as some in the Bay are suggesting, it might be time for the Warriors to move off of Draymond? I don't see him doing that, but some say, oh, it's time for them to move off of Draymond.
I don't see them doing that. They probably should, but I don't know any team in the league that would want to take that four-year, $100 million contract, given all his baggage. You know, I've always said about Draymond, you put him on a different team with no Steph, no Clay, what's his value, especially on the offensive end? He's going to be a good defender. We know that. But offensively, you know, is he going to come to Sacramento, let's say? There was some talk, should the Kings go after him? You know, I actually sort of like the fit of him in Sacramento. We talk about, you know, a guy that could play alongside Sabonis.
Brings a little edge.
Brings a lot of edge. Yeah, exactly. But he brings a lot of headaches as well. And, you know, I just don't know what kind of team would want to acquire a guy like Draymond. Maybe the Lakers, because they got LeBron And, you know, he's best friends with LeBron, those two are tight. But, you know, when you look at what Draymond did and the league's response, I'm okay with the indefinite suspension. Because to me, and a lot of people are saying, well, indefinite could be 5-6 games. I don't see it that way. I see indefinite is, you know, 3 weeks to a month. We're talking 10 to 15 games. And I'm okay with that. And so I think what the league wants to see is some remorse from Draymond. You know, something heartfelt where he's trying to change. He wants to, you know, go get the mental health. Because what you're seeing is, by all accounts, he's great off the court. It's just the anger management when you get in the heat of battle.
Have you ever seen him with his, like, his kids?
He's great. Like,
tremendous
with the kids.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's like a big teddy bear with the kids.
And they clearly love
him. But he gets in between those lines, he turns into a different guy.
Mm-hmm. So, could the Dubs be done with Draymond? We're right back with that and more from the Golden One Center, the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Coming to you from the Golden One Center where they're working a little, I don't want to spoil any surprises, Kyle Draper, but a kind of a Family Feud style game they got.
I love Family Feud.
Yeah.
What was your favorite game show growing up? Newlywed Game?
No, it wasn't.
All right.
That's the Newlywed Game. I did used to like shows like, I don't know if you remember, Match Game in Hollywood Squares, because what they would do is they would film a whole week, like they do a couple in the morning, and then they'd all go out and get tanked, and then they'd come back and finish the week. So by Friday, they're they're all drunk.
You would like that.
I didn't even know as a kid.
As a kid,
these
you're
guys
like,
are goofy.
Right, exactly.
Wow, they're having fun.
What happened from Monday to Friday, Mom? What's the difference, you know? My favorite game show, Pressure Luck. Remember that? With
I
the
do.
Whammies?
Yeah.
Big bucks, no whammies, stop.
Yeah.
They got a new version that's out now, too. And so I love it, man. Introduced it to the kids as well.
Yeah.
They're into it.
Password, they've brought back. Jimmy Fallon is on a new Password. But the Feud is a classic. The Family Feud is a classic.
Now, do you remember this game show? This is probably in the 90s, maybe. Change of Heart. It was a dating show.
I don't think I do.
It was a dating show. So the guy would, I don't think she was a girlfriend or something, but he would go out on a date with one girl. And then they'd introduce this other woman, and they'd go out on a date, and he'd have to decide, do I stay with her, or do I have a change of heart?
Change of heart.
Oh, no.
I don't know about that one, man. I think that was short-lived. I think
I never
people
saw that one.
Google it, change of heart.
Yeah.
Those are the days. Man.
Are you, or have you ever been a Jeopardy fan?
Yes.
Great show.
I love it when they have sports on there, sports categories.
Oh, yeah, and the people.
And, like, and they have, that's so embarrassing. What's going on in America? I mean, like, is this what we want? Like, it'd be like, yeah, so this player, nicknamed the King, won 4 NBA championships, 2 with Miami, 1 with Cleveland, and 1 with the Lakers. Michael Jordan, you know, it's like, come on, man, what are we doing here? Like, what are we teaching these people in this world? So, yeah, man, I love game shows.
Yeah, we used to have an old, what would it be, Nintendo 2, and my daughter would play Jeopardy, but the thing is, you had to type in every answer, so you'd have to, like, you know, scroll over to the letters.
I remember that.
What? W-H-A-T-I-S. Oh, I made a mistake. I got to go back.
Oh, yes. I do remember that. Those were the days, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're having game night here at the Golden One. Looks like we're going to have a lot of fun with TV game shows and even some board games. No fun what happened to Yusuf Nurkic a couple nights ago. First of all, what did you just think of Draymond's action? Jay and I talked about that yesterday. I mean, no matter what you think of Draymond or the suspension, it was just a weird thing the way that happened.
A weird thing, and, you know, his explanation afterwards, he was grabbing me, I was just trying to sell it. No, that was violent what he did.
Mm-hmm.
That was a violent shot to the head. Obviously, no place in the NBA for something like that. And I understand, and I've brought it up before. When you get between those lines, I turn into a different person. You know, people at home listening right now, driving in the car, they may say, oh, Drapes, you're so lovable and cuddly. You're such a, you know. But once I get him in, you know, the testosterone takes over, so right. I get it. But, you know, never
just ask
something.
The people that he plays pickup
exactly.
with.
Exactly. The Folsom Lifetime, they banned me from playing with them. They see me coming in like, uh-oh, here we go. But it's never been something like that. You know, never been something like, oh, thank you, Selena, with our meal of the day being delivered here. Thank you, Selena. But it's never been something like that. And the thing that concerns me about Draymond is you look at the Rudy Gobert incident. You look at what happened the other night with Jusef Nurkic. These are sort of unprovoked incidents. Like the Gobert incident, he wasn't even a part of. Things were settling down, and all of a sudden he comes, runs in, and escalates it. The same thing with Nurkic. What Nurkic did, that happens on every single possession among big men in the NBA, and he took it to that level. And so if I'm the NBA, you have to not only send a message, Whitey, you have to do something to deter this from escalating into something more. This is how the malice in the palace starts. If you let a guy like this continue to get away with it. And so it's not about sending the message. To Joe Dumars' point, and he spoke today on First Take, it's about getting some help for this dude, because if he's going to step on the floor again, you can't have another incident like that.
I'm all for that. I just wonder why it took the league and or the team so long to realize the guy needs help. You know, I mean, and it's possible, right, as we discussed yesterday, if somebody, you know, they need help, but they say, I don't need any help, there's really only so much you can do. So if they've tried to help Draymond and he has resisted that, okay, I get that. But it took the league and the Warriors this long with everything that he's done to say, this guy may need some help. By the way, the other thing, when Draymond was explaining what he did to Nurkic, and he said, I don't flop. You know I don't flop. Well, Kings fans don't flop, right? He just did.
He just flopped like a week
right
or two
over
ago.
There.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny.
But, you know, where the league dropped the ball on Draymond isn't the Gobert situation. It isn't even the Domas stop. It's the punch to Jordan Poole. That right there should have signaled
the league said, we'll let the team handle it. Yeah.
And the organization, like, this dude, something is not right. And for not, they didn't punish him for that.
They did not suspend
him. They did not suspend him for that, which is unfathomable now that you look back on it. It's like, dude, we saw the warning signs. You sucker punch your teammate. You stomp on Domas. Choke hold. Now you got this. You know, and to me, like I said, it's not sending the message. It's A, getting this dude some help, and B, letting them know that, you know what, before you come back, we got to make sure this doesn't happen ever again. Because what if Nurkic got up and hauled off on him? You know, and that's how things escalate, you know. So I give Nurkic a lot of credit, man, because, you know, in the heat of battle, who knows? You do that to the wrong person, they may want to go fight you back, and then that's how things escalate.
I agree with you, and I think where they really have dodged a bullet is in those instances where, and we've seen it here a little bit, I'm thinking of Memphis a couple years ago, where Draymond gets thrown out, and then he starts parading around the arena on the road and screaming
like it's
at
wrestling
people. I mean, that obviously, there are some horrible things that could happen in those situations.
Exactly.
And yeah.
Kudos to Kings fans for, you know, not throwing things, not chucking things at them. You know, like I said, that's how the malice in the palace started. And so it's sort of like he's become a caricature, a cartoon figure, an actor almost, where his play is being far overshadowed by all of his antics. And to your point, you know, stomping around and trying to egg on the crowd and everything, what is this? You know, this is not, you know, the, you know, Roman times where you got gladiators fighting in the ring. This is professional basketball. This is supposed to be entertainment, and he's taking it a little too far for sure.
You know, I think his name is Mark Boyle, and he's been a Pacer announcer for a long time. We had him on, maybe he's not currently, we had him on after the Malice in the Palace on this station, and he was telling us about, you know, like talking to then Ron Artest after that. I think he said Ron had like a cut or something. He was asking him, Ron, what happened? And he said Ron Artest really didn't know what had happened with everything. He was like, I don't know. And sometimes I wonder if Draymond
sort of,
he does these things, he's not sure. Yeah, when he says I didn't mean to do it, he doesn't even know. But the thing that makes me skeptical of this is Draymond repeatedly through all these incidents, he eventually says, I'm gonna be me, I'm gonna do what I do. And so now we're supposed to believe that because, you know, the league has decided this is it, that he's going to go, okay, now you're right. I need help, and I'll admit everything, and I'll be a changed man. I'd love to see it if that helps him, but I don't believe that's going to happen.
So what's the appropriate time then? What's the appropriate time frame? You know, five games isn't going to get it done, right? I mean, what's is it 10? Is it 15? And he still might not.
Right.
You know,
you got to do two
changed.
Things, right? You got to help him.
Yeah.
If that's really what you want. Also, you got to be able to convince fans and your sponsors that, all right, it's been long enough now. You know, people have to buy. If you a week, you know, from now say he's good, no one buys it. But you're also selling it to your sponsors and TV networks. A month? 20 games?
Right.
What do you think?
No, I think minimum 15. I think, but the issue is you could suspend him 20 games, 30 games, 40 games. What happens when he does eventually come back? How do we know he's a changed man?
Right.
And so this it has to be now where it's zero tolerance when it comes to this guy right now. Any kind of physical action, whether it's a stomp or a punch, you're barred. It's a year-long suspension or something like that, something mm-hmm. really drastic. And so I don't think we're there yet, but I think minimum 15 games should be the right answer.
When we come back, going to shift gears a little bit, there's a very interesting conversation going on about the Giants and baseball and the city of San Francisco. Is the city the reason the Giants are in what Buster Posey calls a free agent slump? Kyle and I will get into that along with you. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140 as the Drive Guys roll on from the Golden 1 Center. Drive Guys at the Golden 1 Center, they just completed the rehearsals for the introduction of the starting lineups. Kyle Draper, I want to ask you something about that.
Yeah.
And I just, for some reason, noticed it last game. I know it wasn't new last game, but I think it's kind of cool. Typically, correct me if I'm wrong, but an NBA team, this goes back years and years and years, your big star's the last one introduced, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And from North Carolina, number 23, whatever. Oh, well, De'Aaron Fox is the first guy introduced, and then Domas is last. And I think that's kind of cool, because you know Fox could say, hey, I've been here longer. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but I saw that and I thought that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and it's something I noticed last year too.
Uh-huh.
It was done that way last year as well. And I don't know how they decide that. Did De'Aaron come out and say, "No, let Domas," or vice versa? But you're right. Usually the star player wants to wait until the last one to hear his name called, and then the crowd goes into a frenzy. And so maybe that shows you just how these two guys are able to work together, you know, two stars.
I like to think of it that way.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's how I'm going to think of it. Like, oh, that's mighty nice of De'Aaron to do that.
Yeah. We are just going to switch gears real quickly here because this is something we've been meaning to talk about for a couple days, haven't gotten to it, and then there's so much going on. I just wanted to talk about it now with Kyle back and before we lose the thread of the Giants and free agency and Ohtani and all of that. Buster Posey was one of the Giants who was involved in the recruiting, if you will, of Shohei Ohtani. The Giants, of course, didn't get him. So Buster Posey spoke with Andy Baggerly about the process. And he said, Buster Posey said, something I think is noteworthy, something that unfortunately keeps popping up from players and even the players' wives, is there's a bit of uneasiness with the city itself as far as the state of the city with crime and drugs. Whether that's all completely fair or not, perception is reality. It's a frustrating cycle. I think, and not just with baseball. Baseball is secondary to life and the important things in life, but as far as free agent pursuit goes, I have seen that it does affect things, end quote. That's an interesting comment, and it has sparked a lot of reaction. I think there's some political undertones to all that, but before I go any further, what do you make of that on the surface?
You know, this is I don't want to say a touchy issue or a tricky issue.
It is, it is.
But I would argue they're probably for a segment of baseball players, free agents, athletes, whoever, there is some concern about the city. Not that it's warranted, though, but just that the narrative that's being painted about the city of San Francisco. You know, you've been down there. You spend some time there. I go down there from time to time. I'm walking down the streets of San Francisco all the time when I go there. I stay down right downtown, Hotel Villa, right across the street from the ballpark, or the Clancy, right downtown in the Mission area. It's, you know, it has changed, but I don't buy that's, you know, a deterrent for Shohei Ohtani.
Thank you.
Or somebody like that.
Yeah.
That to me is, I will say, it probably is an issue that you raise. Like if you're a family moving to San Francisco, well, I heard about this. Then you do your own research and see, and you talk to people that actually live there, you know. But the problem with it is you got this narrative that's being spouted out. I got friends in Boston, you know, you mentioned San Francisco and it's like, oh, San Fran. And you know as well as I do, L.A. has issues. Every major city has issues. Every major city has a homeless problem. Where was I at the other day? A couple of weeks ago. We were on the road. It wasn't Minneapolis. I forget where it was. And I was like, man, where are the homeless people? Because it was a clean city. And it shocked me. It wasn't saying I got to think about where we were, because it shocked me. But what you have happening in a lot of these cities, too, is they you know, create a neighborhood, if you will, for these homeless to go. And so I just think it's bogus, man. I think San Francisco is a great city. I love going into San Francisco. San Francisco, when you look at it, Whitey, I used to always say this when I drove down. As you drive down and you hit the Berkeley area, the Oakland area, it's just a different vibe, a different feel, which is great for me. Like, I love it. I love how I feel when I get to San Francisco. And then you go to some of the different neighborhoods and everything. I just think it's bogus, man. The city is getting a bad rap. And then, you know, living up in Folsom and up here in Northern California, you get so many Bay Area transplants. And then you get people in the neighborhood saying, oh, we don't want those Bay Area transplants. Every politics has touched everything in our society, and it's a shame right now.
Yeah, two things. I've been working before I came back here for a couple of years on a fill-in basis, part-time basis in the city. And I, you know, parking on the street, I know that I was fortunate, but I never had a break in. And whether I'm parking here in Sacramento or in San Francisco, you know, you don't leave like a backpack in your front seat,
put it
in the trunk. So I didn't, and I, you know, walk the streets at all hours and I didn't have issues. I know, like any major city, as you say, you got to be careful, but I didn't see anything especially worse there. And the other thing is, if you're a free agent, you're making that kind of money, and you're going to play with the Giants. You're not going to live in San Francisco. You know, it's Walnut Creek or wherever.
Yeah.
Danville or what, you know. It's like, you're not like you're going to get a house or an apartment across the street from the ballpark. Your family isn't going to live. So, Casey Pratt yesterday, who we know, we've had him on the station. He works in the Bay Area, and he came on the station a lot during the summer to talk about the fight to keep the A's in Oakland. And he yesterday, to somebody, he responded, he said, the players don't live in the city. This is made up. The problem is the roster or the team. Stop blaming it on the city. It's just you're looking for excuses.
Yes. But who started this Giants narrative? Was it Buster Posey? Was it Farhan? Was it Buster Olney? Like, where did this all come from? You know, where does like or have they actually heard from players? Like, no, I don't want to go there because of this. But the problem is the perception is becoming reality. The people who are dissing San Francisco, they're so vocal about it. You see it, you know, on social media everywhere that, you know, there are some people that actually believe that's what it's really like. I urge people, take a trip to the Bay. Go to San Francisco. Go to Oakland. Walk around. And what you'll see is a vibrant city, a city full of life. Sure, it may be some crime. Sure, it may be some homelessness, but that's everywhere. That's in every major American city.
I think in some cases, this is my opinion. As you say, it's kind of a slippery slope. I think there are some, and all walks of life, not just baseball players, who politically lean right a little more. And San Francisco, we know, is a very left-leaning city. And so sometimes some of this, I think, may be code for it's a really liberal city. They don't know what they're doing there. You know, so it's all the crime and everything. And I don't know that that's really what they mean. To answer your question, I do know a couple years ago, the free agent Seiya Suzuki came over from Japan. And supposedly he and his wife said, oh, San Francisco was too, you know, it was not clean enough. I don't know if that's true, but it kind of started there. And for years there's been kind of rumblings about some players don't want to go to San Francisco, not just because of the city itself, but because of the politics.
Yeah, and that's a shame, too.
And that's their right.
That's their right. Yeah. That's their right.
Obviously.
But it's a shame because San Francisco, like I said, is a great city, great people. Has it changed? Yes. You know, COVID changed a lot of places, though. You know, COVID changed a lot of American cities. And San Francisco is just now starting to come back. But I love it when I go down there. The restaurant scene, walking around, just the vibe of the city, the shopping in Union Square I go hang out, mm-hmm. some sneaker stores in certain neighborhoods I go to. And so and people say, well, how come the Niners don't have that issue? But I can argue, how come the Warriors don't have that? Warriors have no problem attracting free agents.
Right.
You know, free agents want to play with Golden State. I haven't heard an NBA free agent say, nope, I don't want to be in San Francisco. So I think it's hogwash.
By the way, thank you, Simone. Just sent me an update here. I don't know if you've seen this yet, Kyle. This is a Woj, maybe not a Woj bomb, but it involves the Kings. Quote from Woj on X. Sacramento Kings are signing forward Juan Toscano-Anderson to a one-year deal, sources tell ESPN. Juan Toscano-Anderson, he's had stops with the Warriors, Lakers, and Jazz, has been playing with Mexico City of the G League. JTA, it's a great story, grew up in Oakland.
Yep.
Mike Brown's very familiar with him, of course, because he coached him with Golden State. He's not a guy who's going to propel you, into the finals or anything, and I don't even know if they plan to bring him have him play with the Kings or if he'll be a G League guy, but interesting. Juan Toscano-Anderson signing with the Kings. Breaking news this afternoon.
Yeah. And I don't
very
know.
Very versatile player who plays very hard.
6'6" guy, can shoot the ball even though his numbers have been down. I think he can shoot it. I like his stroke. I don't know how much he helps you. You know, I think this is sort of like a Filip Petrushev kind of move where you take a look at him for a couple of weeks, three.
And who's the other guy? They just signed Stanley.
Oh, Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody you bring in, see, you know, what he looks like in practice, see if he can help you out. You know, with this signing, if I'm correct, this means that they would have a full roster. So, you know, that might affect, you know, as we get closer to the trade deadline, if Juan Toscano-Anderson is still on the roster, it might affect any kind of move you make in terms of how many players you can bring back.
Gotcha. I'll tell you one thing that I really came to admire about JTA when he was in Golden State. He can go long stretches without playing, and he's not a great player, but he plays hard. He'll knock down some shots. And he'll go a long stretch without playing. You plug him in, and he's going to give you everything he's got.
He's a pro, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those guys not going to complain about minutes or anything like that. Does what the coach asks him. And you said it. He plays hard, too, which I think this team needs.
All right. When we come right back, no wonder this NFL season has felt a little uneven. A staggering NFL quarterback stat for you. When we come right back to the Golden One Center, Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason, Sactown Sports. So the newest Sacramento King, Juan Toscano-Anderson, acquired today. Apparently, Simone says he just tweeted, light the beam, man. So welcome aboard, Juan Toscano-Anderson.
Light the beam.
Yeah. And we'll see if he ends up with the big club. A good character guy. At the very least.
Yeah, good locker room guy.
Really good guy. One of those guys who really appreciates that he's even here.
Yeah, and he knows the system, too. And
yeah, so good point.
I would like to see him actually get a real shot.
Me too.
And see what he can do, you know? I don't know if that's a position in need. What is he, a 2-3, you think? What kind of a...
He's more of more of a 3, could play a little stretch 4. He's more of a wing, I think.
Yeah, more of a wing, right?
Yeah.
A tough position to crack. In Sacramento, but clearly they want to take a look at this guy. And so I would like to see him get, you know, a week or two of run just to see what he can do.
I think he could give you what he gives you more consistently, frankly, than what we've seen from some of the guys that have been coming off the bench. I mean, I'm talking about Chris Duarte, okay? Chris Duarte. And
don't speak bad about my boy Chris Duarte. That's my guy.
I love Chris Duarte. He has not played as well as I hoped he would play at this point. And I'm sure he hasn't played as well as he'd hope he would have played either. He's had his moments.
Yeah, he's had his moments. And I was shocked that, you know, he was basically out of the rotation.
Yeah.
You know, because he was injured. Remember, he was out for a couple of days. And
but that's been one of the knocks on him.
Yeah, that is true. And then to get a DNP CD in that loss against the Clippers, like, you know, it's he played 12 minutes when it was out of out of reach. But this was a guy that was in the rotation before he got hurt. Remember, he started a couple of games. And now, you know, he barely can crack the rotation. So I think Mike Brown's still trying to figure it out, man. And here we are 22 games in, and that's concerning to me.
Do you think that Mike Brown needs to figure out what his rotation is and then stick with it? Or do you think, to a degree, the bench is always going to be mixing and matching based on the opponent and how guys are playing?
Because I'm going to give you a third option, too.
Okay. Because I know, you know, as yeah. fans, we always say, at any level, well, the coach has to have a rotation. Everyone has to play. And sometimes I think coaches look at it and go, that doesn't really necessarily help us.
I think in an ideal world, Mike Brown would have a rotation. But because of the inconsistency with everybody, that's why you're seeing him try to mix and match. And so in an ideal world, he'd have his top nine, his reliable nine, and given certain matchups, all right, we're going to play this guy tonight or we're going to play that guy tonight. But I think because everybody has been wildly inconsistent coming off the bench outside of Malik Monk and Trey Lyles, I guess, you know, those are your top seven. After that, everybody's been sort of interchangeable because they haven't played well on a consistent basis. Think about it. We saw Davion get more minutes than Keon Ellis last game. You know, and I understand it was a blowout and things like that, but what does that tell us? And mm-hmm. so you can look at the backup point guard position. You can look at the Sasha Bezenkov position. Whatever, you know, guys just haven't been consistent enough to earn that trust and earn those minutes. And so if I'm Mike Brown, that's why you're seeing Chris Duarte in and out of the lineup, Sasha in and out of the lineup, Kessler Edwards. Like, I would like him to settle on eight or nine guys. But somebody has to go up there and take those reins and force his hand to be like, nope, I'm going to play you, Sasha, 20 minutes a night.
Jay and I were talking about this yesterday, and I said that, in my opinion, the two most interesting guys on the roster right now, not the best or the most fun, but most interesting given what they can give you and where they are with their playing time, I said Sasha and Davion Mitchell. Because to me, they're two guys that still have great potential, and they're still trying to figure out what they are, and I think they could still have a lot to do with how good you are, whether they're here or not, whether they get moved or they're here and they develop. I think those two guys are still really the most interesting players on the roster because I think they're key to the Kings getting better because of the potential that they have.
I agree with you on Sasha. I think Sasha has tremendous potential. I think we're only seeing about 30% of him so far of what he can give this team.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could be a true rotation. Davion, I'm worried about. I'm a believer in who Davion is, and I'm a believer in his talents. But I question whether this is the best system for him. This is something I've echoed before. You know, under the previous regime, when it was Luke Walton and Alvin Gentry, it was a guard-dominated offense. You didn't have Sabonis to run through. You didn't have Sabonis to play off. I think Davion's at his best when he has the ball in his hands. And when Mike Brown came in, the system shifted, and I think Davion has probably had the biggest challenge with that more than any other player. Now, no knock on him. I just think it doesn't play to his strengths. And so
I also think, to your point, yeah. I think, and a lot of people have been throwing this around, the fact that Mike Brown wants him to push pace more, that might not be a good fit for Davion's game.
Yeah, which it shouldn't be that hard, though, right? Push pace means, all right, let's run. Get it up. Pass it ahead. Everything like that. That should be able to fit any system, right? Like, but for some reason, it hasn't translated for Davion. And I like I said, the guy puts in the work. We were here, you know, me and High Flyer, seeing this guy out here at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. I think he still has value. Even if the Kings, I don't know that they have, but if they decided, you know, he's not a good fit here, I think he still has value.
Around the league.
Yeah.
I think so, but his value diminishes with each game that he's buried on the bench.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to see him play. And that's one of the things about Mike Brown that, you know, I would like to see is, you know, guys be able to play through mistakes. What was the game where JaVale McGee made a mistake and played 3 minutes? Remember that? It's like, I feel,
was the New Orleans game.
Yeah, the New Orleans
Monday.
Game. Yeah, New Orleans. I feel like guys, you know, I'm not talking about the core guys, obviously. I'm talking about the guys who, you know, are really battling for minutes, mostly Davion. At times, he's playing sort of scared to make a mistake out there, unsure of himself, and you see it manifesting.
It just doesn't work.
I would like to see Mike, all right, Davion, not necessarily say it, but give them a longer leash. You know what? I'm a rock with you. We're going to take some bumps and bruises, but in the long run, it's going to benefit us. Same thing with Sasha, I said. You know, I would like Mike to invest 20 minutes a night in Sasha so that by the time March and April comes where you're making a push for the playoffs, he's no longer an NBA rookie. He's a guy that knows the league and is fully adjusted. And so that's what I would like to see. And so, but Mike is in the business of winning basketball games right now. And so he's going to put the guys out there who best help him win on this given day.
When we come right back, we'll revisit a potential Kings trade target. Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports.